Welcome to the Nature Photo Guys podcast,
where we talk about nature photography from gear to our philosophies and everything in between.
So grab a cup of coffee, sit back and relax.
You're listening to Joe Desjardins
and Chris Gibbs, the Nature Photo Guys.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Nature Photo Guys podcast.
We're extremely excited to be joined by the 2023 Canadian Geographic Photographer of the Year. Originally born in Windsor, Ontario, this wildlife and nature photographer now calls the northeastern British Columbia town of Tumbler Ridge home. Having studied fish and wildlife in college, his journey into the world of wildlife and nature photography was sparked when he started taking photos in 2007. His stunning work has garnered widespread recognition and has been featured in numerous publications, including Outdoor Canada and Canadian Geographic, showcasing his talent and commitment to ethical wildlife photography. Please welcome to the show, Brandon Broderick.
Hey, Brandon, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, we've been really looking forward to this, especially after we saw that you know you won some little award thing or whatever.
Yeah,
you know, kind of garnered some recognition. So we thought, you know what, maybe it's time to get him on the show. You know, so. But no, very cool achievement. That is something we will certainly tackle a little later in the show. But for now, Brandon, just like most of our podcasts, the way we start things, just tell the viewers a little bit about yourself there.
So I currently live in Northeast BC in Tumbler Ridge. I was in Terrace, BC in the Northwest for about 11 years before I moved here, about a year and a half ago. I started taking photos in 2007. That's when I got my first DSLR. Before that, I was using a Sony 3 megapixel point and shoot just to do like desktop backgrounds for my computer. When I was in my second year of college, I lived in a house on a lake and just used to do sunrise, sunsets, just basic stuff like that. Right. And a couple of my roommates, they wanted to use some of the photos I took as their desktop backgrounds. And for some reason I was like, you know what? I'm really good at this. I need to just dive in. Which is a joke. I say the worst things to myself. It's a constant battle with, was that imposter syndrome? I think they call it.
Oh yeah, you betcha.
So I bought my first DSLR in 2007. It was a Canon Digital Rebel, just a 6 megapixel with a 18-55 and a 70-300 Sigma.
Yeah.
Nothing fancy at all, but it definitely, you know, you don't need anything fancy to learn the basics. So that's what I started with.
No. Oh, exactly. Yeah.
God.
No. And then, in 2010, my dad passed away and I did the really responsible thing with, some inheritance, and I spent $30,000 in one shot at a Henry's camera store.
No. And
wow.
Yeah. And that's why I have all the gear I have now.
So the rest is history. Holy crap.
Yep.
Wow, that's awesome. Canon, I assume.
Canon, So
we know.
Well, Olympus just sent me, OM Systems, I believe they're called now.
Oh yeah.
They sent me a camera and two lenses to try out.
Mm-hmm.
But I literally haven't used it. I've had them for like 3 weeks. I haven't used it. I went to Costa Rica a couple weeks ago, and I was planning on bringing the OM system stuff there. It's really lightweight. Like it does seem like really good stuff, but with wildlife stuff, there's a lot of once in a lifetime encounters, and I was worried I would have a once in a lifetime encounter and be fumbling with all the new, cause it's so foreign to me. These new cameras. And I didn't want to miss something. And I also don't want to just be shooting on full auto and just hope for the best.
Yeah. So, and that's not something you can do, man. Like you cannot take a brand new system to any photo trip.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like you need some time with it for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. You're paying good money. You know what you know what to expect on that trip, you know, as far as, you know, wildlife you're going to pursue. But at the same time, like, those anomalies, right? Those once in a lifetime, those really rare, you know. Did you see anything rare? Like, I think there's jaguars down there, aren't there?
There's pumas
or pumas,
mountain lions and ocelots that were right on the, the property that we stayed on. It was this 1500 acre,
nice
kind of private piece of land with a few bungalows on it.
Yeah.
I didn't see any of those. You guys would probably have seen those photos online. Those would have been the first ones shared.
Lots of birds.
Lots and lots of birds. It wasn't a photo trip. It was just a escape winter it was only a 4-day trip. We just went down there, but I also can't go and not bring my camera stuff. So,
Of course.
Yeah. You bet.
Yeah. I saw some howler monkeys. Nice. This really cool, toucanette. So it's a toucan, but it's a kind of smaller. Our guide hadn't seen one in 10 years. So that was a pretty rare sighting.
Oh, wow.
And then we saw one of the classic looking toucans on one of our last days there. So those are some of the highlights. An anteater and an armadillo. Those were pretty cool to see. Those were right outside our bungalow. So that was pretty neat.
Cool.
But yeah, I do really want to go back. It'd be cool to lead a photo tour there.
Yeah.
Go to a place more in the jungle. We were kind of in like the highland dry area, which was great. Mm-hmm. But you know, when I think of Costa Rica, I think of like jungles and really,
that's right.
You know, yeah. Rainforest. Yeah. So that will be the goal of the next trip, hopefully.
Yeah, for sure. Nice. So what brought you from Windsor all the way to Tumbler Ridge, BC? Yeah.
So I had always, as a kid, watching nature documentaries, I was always fascinated with the West Coast, with the province of BC in general. So when I was in 2007, I got that camera and I was working in a town called Orillia, Barrie, Ontario. That's where I was working, doing pest control, like helping people get raccoons out of their attic, just stuff like that. And
that's Ontario.
I had moved from Windsor to that place for the job. Mm-hmm. And then I found out a few weeks or months in there that they were going to lay me off for the winter. And I'm like, I never would have taken this job if I knew I was going to get laid off. So I started applying to jobs in Vancouver. And within like 5 days, I was living and working in Vancouver. And it happened very quickly. So I was in Vancouver for 2 years. Then the thing with my dad happened. So I went back home to deal with that. I hung out in Windsor for 2 years, just photographing ducks at marinas and deer and stuff. And, you know, nothing against that, but it got, I wanted more. So I started again looking for jobs in that pest control realm. And I found one in Terrace. And that job, basically my route, my area that I covered was like the whole of Northwest BC. So I got to travel on company dime, bring my camera and look for wildlife as I was traveling between all the communities.
Awesome.
And then got real tired of that job. I do not like doing pest control. It's not my favorite. I hate killing stuff. I'm not in that world. It was just kind of, it was an easy job to get and it got me out there. So
sure.
And then I just really, once I got to Terrace, I really started to focus on the wildlife and the landscape photography, really dove into it. So I've just been doing random jobs in Terrace, allowing me to pay bills so I could just go out and take photos. So it's about a decade of paycheck to paycheck. And then I met my wife, who she's a family physician. So thankfully she makes enough money that I can now do this full time and not worry about not being able to pay the bills. So I don't want people to think that I'm able, I do this full time, but I do not make a good living doing this full time. I just make enough to cover my expenses and that. So she did her training in Europe as a foreign trained doctor in BC. You have to do a 2-year rural contract. So we met when I was in Terrace and she had accepted a job in Tumbler Ridge. I had always heard of Tumbler Ridge because there's dinosaur tracks here. Like there's tracks from dinosaurs. It's mind blowing. So
wow. I had no idea.
I was excited to come here and we've been here about a year and a half And
oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah. I love it. The wildlife is tough. It's very, very tricky here. There's not, there's a lot of traffic on the back roads. There's just a lot of oil and gas, a lot of forestry.
Okay.
And a lot of predator hunting. Like people love shooting cats.
Oh, serious.
Here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Lynx.
Cats, you say?
Yeah. Lynx and cougars are chased up trees by houndsmen. The guy we bought our house from, he used to have hounds. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, when I'm out looking for fresh tracks in the snow, so are they. And, so most of the photos I do being based in the Northeast, I go down to Jasper or I go way up to the Northern Rockies near the Yukon border to, Muncher Lake, Fort Nelson area.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
This is my home base, but I don't really do, I try. I've been out like three times this week. I saw a grouse and a red squirrel and it's, it's tricky. It's really tough to actually find stuff here. And when I do find things here, they want nothing to do with humans. They're gone. You know, I can't get within 200 yards of a coyote.
I'm guessing because of the pressure of everybody back there. Right. So
that's what my, my thoughts are. So next, early April, I'm going back to Terrace for, you know, 7 to 10 days and check out some of my old spots and see what I can find.
Nice.
So have you ever had a run in with, any of the hunters while you were out there with a camera versus, you know, them trying to shoot a cat or something?
I have not. Thankfully, okay. I have not. It's just something people talk about here. Like, I just know that's what's done here. Mm-hmm. I don't want to encounter them because they have guns and I have opinions and I don't want those to
that's right. To yeah. Yeah. There. Well, that was kind of one of the reasons I was asking, right? Because, you know, coming across somebody that actually does that, you know, and, or a photographer coming across somebody that actually does that, man, it could get kind of heated if you have, two very opinionated people, right? You know, I'm not saying you are or they are, but you know, you know how that can clash. Well, I mean, two people can clash about anything, but, something like that. Yeah. I could certainly see.
And there's nothing I can do. They're doing a legal activity, which is, it's crazy that it's allowed. If I interfere with them, I'm the one breaking the law, not them.
Correct.
So it's kind of a, it's not,
Get that. And it's even, you know, down here with owls, right?
Yeah.
People baiting for great grays and snowies and stuff. It's a legal activity as of right now. It, in my eyes, it's not very ethical, but what can you do? Right. You know, it's you try and spread the awareness, you know, you bring things up, you try and have those conversations in the field and everything else. But at the same time, there's no legal action. It's just a shitty scenario.
When I started, I was involved. I was on a couple of shoots where live mice were involved and I was just like,
oh, yeah,
I was so new to it. I was like, is this just how it is? And then it quickly was like, no, I want nothing to do with any of this stuff.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
And
for sure.
Yeah. Again, if it's a legal activity, it's hard to actually do anything about it. But I just felt how are you proud of those photos? You're kind of cheating. I mean, you're not, but you are. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I see where you're coming from and you know, you kind of see this stuff on social media and, I have a pretty good idea of who's doing it and who's not doing it out there. And, you know, a lot of times you'll browse, across a bunch of different, social or same social media platform, but different photographers and they all have kind of the same shot.
Yeah.
And you know, you know, who's who and, you know, they've been caught before and everything else, but I mean, the comment section for those that don't know just blows up for them, right? You know what I mean? Huge dopamine rush of like, wow, great, amazing, all this kind of stuff. So maybe that's why. I don't know. I don't know if they're really trying to sell tours or anything, but it's one of those things that I can't comprehend. I don't understand why. So
everyone's free to do what they want. And it's just one of those things that, you know, personally, I like to... I'm more of a fair chase guy, you know, not physically chasing things, but, you know, just, you know, hoping for those opportunities, you know, trying to, you know, luck is such a huge thing in what we do. And, you know, I don't want to say it's all luck, but there's a lot of luck involved. And, you know, knowing your gear and being ready for when those opportunities present themselves is kind of the way I've always tried to do stuff.
Oh, for sure. And and just to add on to that too, as far as being a wildlife photographer, and luck certainly plays a big part of it too, but there's other skills involved too. For instance, tracking, right? Learning to read sign, right? You know, that sort of thing. So just because you're out there and you don't get the shot doesn't mean it wasn't an enjoyable experience. I mean, you're out there, you're especially when you find a fresh set of tracks, there's nothing like it. You know what I mean? Like now you're like, oh, cool. Okay. Where? Right. You know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my favorite mornings around here didn't result in any photos, but you know, I could follow these lynx tracks. I could see where it sat down and was overlooking a valley, and then where it got up and kept walking again. And then I also found some fisher tracks shortly after that. So I followed those for a bit, and yeah, there's always, stuff to be learned in these, you know, so-called failure mornings, but it's not, they're not failures. They're just opportunities to learn. And
yeah,
you know, you can't win them all. Like I'm definitely, I haven't had a, you know, a good local encounter in a long time. So, but I still go out. And you know, I was in Terrace for over a decade, so I got to know that area, the seasons, you know, where things should be at certain times of the year, certain times of day. I'm still learning here. And, you know, it's not going to happen overnight. I do find a lot of lynx at night here. So, and that's real hard to photograph. And, so that is, I've thought maybe trying to do more of a safari style, photo night shoot, but I also don't like blasting lights in these animals' eyes in the night. Cause you know, I'm not using flash. It's only happened one night. I saw two lynx one night and I was like, you know, hiding up. Or holding a flashlight between my legs, between my knees, trying to point it at it. And I'm hand holding the 500 at like 1/40th of a second shutter speed. Oh, it's just impossible.
Trying to keep that ISO down, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So I'm curious about Tumbler Ridge itself. I mean, Tumbler Ridge was in the news like about 20 years ago. And my wife and I actually considered looking into it a little further and moving up there. I know it was a mining town. Is it still kind of that type of thing? Or mine shut down, right? Or is there another mine open? Or?
The mines are booming right now. So there's one main company in town. They own four different mines here. I think they're trying to buy another one. So as long as the price of coal remains high, it's a coal mining town and it's not coal for power. It's coal for steel making. So it's the lesser of two coal evils. It's still really hard to see mountains that are literally changing in shape as the days go on from them just mining them. And, you know, the town doesn't exist without that. Like it was, it's a planned community. Like the town was made for the mines.
It didn't exist before the mine came in.
So,
right?
So, but tourism is now a big draw here. This past summer I did a shoot for the tourism agency here. We just got some downhill mountain biking trails. The dinosaur stuff is a real big draw for here too.
Cool.
So one of the guys who was a doctor here before, he's now doing his PhD in paleontology and he's made some pretty cool discoveries. I mean, I go out and discover stuff. Like you can find stuff that no one's ever seen before. It's pretty cool to be involved in some of those little discoveries here and there. But, and you know, within an hour or so you can drive and be in the Rockies and you know, it's nice. We're basically in the foothills of the Rockies here, right in town. Overall, it's a real nice community. The people are great. The nature is great. If you like the outdoors, it really is a great place to be. And houses are cheap, like real cheap. Like you can get a house for under $200,000. And that's
rare. Was the draw like 20 years ago. The draw was way less than that. And I know they had a big rec center they were putting in and all that. I'm sure it's there now, but I know some of the issues were in the winter was hard getting in and out of the town, but I don't know if that's changed or not, but
So Tumbler Ridge is not on its way. It's not on the way to anything. You have to go there, which is nice. It's not like we're along the Alaska Highway or anything like that. It's a pretty quiet spot. But we got evacuated last year because of a wildfire that that got within 4 kilometers of the town. There's a mountain just outside the window there, and the fire got right to the base of that mountain on the other side of it. So at one point they were like, "Hey, everyone, evacuate these two highways." And then it's like, "Don't use that one highway. The fire has jumped it." So it is kind of a scary place to be, because, you know, if you get a couple fires and they block the highways, it can get kind of scary. So with with the lack of snow that we've had this year, we're all kind of hoping for the best. It's going to be a bad year.
Fires are started already.
Everybody's worried about that all over the place, I think. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I was up north back in January, and there's still fires. Like, I saw smoke coming out of the ground. Like, they're currently burning. And I always heard that fires burn through the winter, but to see it for myself was real eye-opening.
Jeez.
Yep.
Wow, that's crazy, man. Crazy, man. Wow. So tell us a little bit about the gear you have. It sounds like you shoot with a Canon. You have a 500. Is that kind of like your primary setup, or are you into mirrorless now?
So I currently shoot. I'm still one of the DSLR guys who's back in the Stone Age, it feels like. I'm like, especially in Costa Rica, just blasting away with my 1DX Mark II. Just and I can just feel all the eyes just look at me, because everyone else is shooting silently at this bird.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I like it. I like a lot of eye contact in my photos. So there's times where I'll take a few photos just to get the animal to look at me, and then I just fire away once it's looking. They're so curious. A lot of animals haven't heard a shutter speed, like a sound of a shutter before. So.
Shutter. Yeah, sure. Exactly.
So yeah, I use a 1D X Mark II as my main body, and then I've got an old 5D Mark II as my my second.
Those were the two I had too. Seriously, those were my two. I jumped from the 5D Mark II straight to the 1D X Mark II. Like, and so those were my two for the longest time. Then I got rid of the Mark II, and then started getting into the mirrorless, right? You know, with Lumix, and then Canon R5 and stuff.
The R5 I think is the next, either the R5 or the R3 or the R5 Mark II or the R1. Before I pull the trigger on anything, I need to see what those cameras offer. If there's not a huge jump in the technology and what they offer, then, you know, I'll wait till they go. I think they already are pretty discounted right now, because the new models are going to come out. So
yeah, we're going to hear about it really soon here, I think.
Yeah, I heard it's going to be after the Olympics, because they've got a bunch of pros testing them at the Olympics. So
is that the R1 or
the R1 and the R5 too. So yeah, I do need to get into the, you know, I need to catch up gear wise and I also need a new lens. My 500 is like 14 years old. So
is it the version 1 or 2?
Version 1.
That's, sorry to cut you off, but it's important that, like, they don't service that lens anymore.
So they don't have parts for it. Yeah.
And
so if it stops working, it becomes really fancy paperweight.
That's right.
And
you can just put it like on a table. It looks kind of cool. Yeah, totally. And that's it, you know,
make it into a lamp or something.
Put some flowers.
That's right. A lamp.
I love the lens, the quality of the glass, the quality of the photos that come out of it. Yeah. It's tough to beat. My issue with it is I've started to enjoy doing a bit of video stuff and the autofocus just does not keep up with the camera that's attached to it. Like that's why a lot of my photos are of stationary thing. There's not much action going on because it just doesn't. And then with the new eye tracking stuff, like, I feel like I'm at such a disadvantage now compared to guys shooting mirrorless with these, the focus. It's crazy. The OM system camera that I have has that. And I was playing around just watching it track my dogs in the house. And it was pretty cool. So I need that just in a Canon version and a lens to keep up with that. So I was looking at the 100 to 500 or 150 to 500, the
100 to 500
RF. Yep.
So that looks great. That 7.1 does worry me a little bit, but these new cameras can shoot at such a high ISO, and with the noise reduction software that's out there now, it's, you know, it's, that 7.1
doesn't matter anymore almost. No. Yeah.
No. Exactly. And that's a really good lens too for video.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a really nice solid.
The stabilization
range
is amazing in that lens.
Yeah.
And just being able to, you know, have a bit of zoom like that, the 500, a lot of times, well, you guys shoot with big fixed lenses, you know, sometimes you're around an animal and you need to get further away or closer, but if you move, you scare the animal away. That's so you're kind of stuck. So having a bit of range would be nice to have. So, I think that's the lens that I'll upgrade to, and then, you know, get an adapter so I can still use all my other lenses too. But yeah, so one of those new mirrorless bodies and then the 100 to 500, I think that's, hopefully this year I'll get some of that stuff.
Nice. I think you're right though, pausing, just waiting for that announcement. Cause I think I heard rumor that there was one coming at the end of April, maybe an announcement, but I mean, it's hard because we've heard rumors of announcements for a year now. And it's like, what do you believe? Right. But it sounds like it's coming this year that there'll be something out, but you know, there could be an announcement and there could be no cameras for 6 months. Like who knows? I guess we're gonna have to wait and see.
But. And my stuff still works fine. I don't have the fancy stuff, so I don't need to, I don't need to upgrade. I just want to.
No,
you don't. And I probably got rid of my 1DX Mark II about 3 or 4 months ago.
Yeah, it wasn't very long.
There was a tear, and the guy's a friend of mine, and he said anytime I wanted to grab it and go shoot with it, I could.
Nice.
Because it has been my favoriteest camera, and it took me – the thing that put me over to the mirrorless side was on one of my workshops – Hadrian, a friend of mine, he was using the R5 and he showed me the animal eye detect because I'd never seen it before. And we were shooting at some rams up on the side of the hill. And when I seen that go, that autofocus point go from body to head to eye in a half, like just a split of a second, locked in on the eye that far away, I was like, you're kidding, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, with the 1DX, you got the fixed points, right? You know, whereas with the R5, I mean, it's edge to edge all around. And when it locked in on that and he was shoot, I was like, oh my God. Okay. Then it was probably, I don't think it was that much longer after that I finally decided, but it still took me a while, Brandon. I still kept shooting with the 1DX because it's like an extension, right? Like it was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Great to shoot with. Always, you know what I mean? It felt good in the hand. The R5 was like, oh, this is kind of small, kind of, you know what I mean? Weird, half the weight, you know, but.
And Joe can attest to this for you as well. Like, I mean, him and I both shoot the R5. I shoot the R5C as well because I do a lot of video. Yep. But he's picked up the R6 Mark II and the low light conditions of that camera. How many times have you touched the R5 in the last 6 months, Joe?
Except for the odd video, I haven't.
Wow.
He's R6 Mark II because of the low light capabilities. Because
It's half the sensor size, right, Brandon? So you're going from 45 to about 24.5.
Right.
And the stuff I'm shooting at 1600, 3200, I'm not even putting it through the noise. I'm not even putting it through noise reduction.
Wow.
Like it is sick how tight and sharp. And so just like the 1DX. So here's an example. So just so you know, with the R5, when I was doing some high ISO shooting with the R5 and I looked at it, I just about puked. I'm like, I just spent how much money on this? And these things looked like they're cause I shoot in raw, but they're mucky and grainy. And I'm like, oh my God. But without understanding that at 45 megapixels, there's so much information there, right? You know what I mean?
So much detail.
Yeah. So much detail. And so, I ended up getting the R6 Mark II, which is half, and it's, you know, a little bit higher than the 1DX, but that's why the 1DX II was also so good in low light because it was 20.2 megapixels or something, right?
Yeah.
And you can attest to this, like that camera is, I've got stuff I have in a PowerPoint presentation shot at 25,000 ISO. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That have gone like it was a wolf at 10:30 at night, you know, and but with a little bit of the noise and everything else, like just unbelievable, right? So video will be primarily, well, all of video, unless it's something that's happening when I'm with the R6, but R5, phenomenal. You know, with the 1-400 on there, that the EF 100-400, yep. Amazing. The R6 is attached to the 500 and it never comes off, man. Like,
okay. Yeah.
Well, so keep that in mind. Like if you're ever going to go with a backup or something like that, or, you know, rent one or try it out or something, but, I think you'll be absolutely amazed at the quality.
But on the video side, for sure, if your goal is to start doing video, the R5 for sure. Like if you're not going to wait for the R5 Mark II, the R5 for sure. There's, you know, it shoots 8K as well. Wow. And there's a, it downsamples from 8K for some of the functions. So actually the 4K looks even better because it's taking from the 8K. And that's why I use the R5C, because every single thing shot on the R5C is downsampled from the 8K.
Okay. Wow. So
there is a difference in quality and look that you won't get on the R6 Mark II. So just keep that in mind.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah. I'm just talking stills here, Brandon.
Oh, that's for sure.
All,
that's
all I'm talking about. Yeah.
And like for stills are always my priority. And you know, some of these encounters are so fleeting. Yeah. Like I don't have time. Like just even getting a photo is an accomplishment. Like it's rare to be like, okay, now I can get the tripod out and now I can.
So cause that's a tank of a lens. Cause I had that originally, the 500 F4, like the Mark I. I have the version two. This lens is going on over 10 years. And I just sent it back to Canon to have them clean it, readjust, you know, check the IS, everything. So she's good to go because you could still get parts for it, right?
Yep.
You know what I mean? So, but that kind of segues into our next question, Chris, when he said about video, because are you shooting more video? And if you are shooting more video, how do you decide? Is it a photo or is it a video? Because we talk about this on almost every podcast.
It's a battle we always have.
Yeah, the struggle is real, as we say. Exactly. That elk bugling, do you want the shot of the head tilted back with the breath coming out? Or do you take a video of the head tilted back with the breath coming out? Like, you know what I mean? So how do you decide? You tell us.
I don't know. It's hard to answer.
See?
Ideally.
That's exactly it, right?
It's going to get harder over time.
Ideally, you want both. You want to have shots of both. For me, like as a primarily a stills guy, I'm usually shooting stills. And video kind of comes after the fact. But there's some things in nature that just look better represented as video, right? So it depends on what's going on. If it's action and you can really slow it down with some of these slower frame rates for video, then that can look really nice.
For sure.
Yeah, I don't know. It's that is a tough question.
It's capturing the behavior in action, right? Versus a frame of it.
And that's the thing right now. I mean, I don't know how this is going to come across, but there's a million photos or tens of millions of photos of an elk bugling, right? There's tens of millions of photos of whatever happening. It's capturing the natural behavior. So, as wildlife photographers progress from, when they first start now, getting some cool images, getting those like trophy shots of the animals, the heads, the head and shoulders, that kind of stuff. And then I think you eventually, you kind of move in or segue into behavior. And that's for me right now, my career is where it's all about is capturing natural behavior.
Yep.
Like the headshots, the trophy shots, don't get me wrong. I take them all day long too, but you come up and you'll get a couple, but now you're waiting for some sort of a response or the elk rut, the fight or a mating or something like that. Right. Now, we're trying to capture that with video, with photos, but now it's like everybody wants to see video, especially in social media, right?
Yeah. And it seems like the algorithm favors videos over photos. Mm-hmm. And, I can't tell you how many reels I see of just a photo that's got a slow zoom in. They're trying to beat the algorithm with a video of a photo.
I know. I've done it. Yeah, you can look at my Instagram.
You got to try it.
I tried it for a while and I just couldn't get into doing it. So now Chris and I are looking at video footage that we've shot over the years of, the elk rut and stuff like that and trying to take clips from that. And you know what I mean? But, I tried. Oh yeah. You betcha. I tried.
Yeah. you gotta play around with it. Cause some things hit big and you're like, that wasn't even like one of the good ones and it hit. Mm-hmm. And then other things you're like, man, this is like my favorite photo I've taken in the last couple of years. And it just takes it. a complete dive.
Yeah, and you got a whole 90 likes on it. Whole 90 likes on that. You know, the best image of your career, and then you get a photo of a Pika's bum.
Yeah,
and it's tens of thousands. True though, right? It makes no sense sometimes. It really doesn't.
And I find if I take photos, like the Costa Rica photos, have been doing absolute terribly in terms of engagement. Like to get 100 likes on one is a huge achievement. So people seem to kind of they're just like, just stick to your thing. Stop. Don't go anywhere. Just do just more links.
You know what? And that's, you know, that's true, because at one point on my Instagram, it was all bears. Right? Like it was just bears, bears, bears. And then I started switching things up, a bird here, a deer here, a duck here, you know what I mean? And this is way before all this, the reels and stuff, but I noticed engagement going down. And then the minute I posted a grizz or something, it went right back up again. So it was almost like my followers came to my channel for bears.
Yeah.
And then when you veered off, so if people are coming to your channel for, say, Northern Canada or Northwestern Canada, boreal wildlife photography, and they see a toucan, they're like, well, you know, I'm just saying, like, maybe there is some truth to that. Like, keep posting, like, show the diversity and everything.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think right now, that's what. That's what I'm doing. That's what Chris is doing. I think that's what a lot of people are doing, is like, okay, screw it. The algorithm isn't working anyways. So let's start posting more of the stuff we enjoy doing. Oh, look at the stuff. Yeah. Like, okay, Brandon, you went to Costa Rica. Look at this cool, what was it? That other toucan, right? You know, like, you know, Chris, what was that seal or something? Harbor seal?
The monk seal.
You know what I mean? Like that was a cool experience. And sure, you didn't get a whole pile of likes or whatever it is, but it's now it's starting to show your audience the diversity of your wildlife photography, right?
Yeah. And
does it make sense?
I've learned that the engagement, it's great for social media, but it really doesn't mean anything at all. Like
it doesn't.
Right.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
It's the thoughts and prayers of social media.
You know, pat on the back, that dopamine rush of where it was, you know, even brands aren't, you know, back in the day, they were really looking at, you know, the followers, that the count really meant something. Now I think it's more based on the quality of followers you have, the engagement you have with those followers, you know, that sort of thing. Comments, right?
Yep.
You know, like as opposed, you know, you may not have a really huge following as a photographer, but if you get 50, 60, 100 comments, people are really engaging.
Yep.
I think that's way more important than having 100,000 followers.
Yeah. Keeping the conversation going.
And, yep.
Yeah. For sure. And I'm terrible at that. Like I will write up a huge, you know, caption and overthink it, and then just be like, grizzly bear, Northwest BC, post it. Like,
oh my God.
So I'm not helping myself at all in that. Cause yeah, if you write a big, long, you know, couple paragraphs of a story, you know, you're telling the algorithm that people like when someone sits on that photo and reads that caption, that's, you know, that's more and more seconds on your photo or video. So
right.
I think that does really, you know, make engagement. Huge difference. Yeah. Yep.
That's whether they interact or not, that's still considered engagement. That's why you remember the carousels were popular at one time.
Yeah.
You can go up to 10. Well, I mean, it's still popular, but you could do like 10 photos or something, and it might've taken you 2 or 3 seconds to get through, but 2 or 3 seconds is longer than the 1 second looking at the photo. And, you know, they see that, and you know, it boils down to ad revenue and like, yeah, it all, you know, it goes to the, how do you say that, to what Instagram wants, right? You know,
yeah,
for sure. Their revenue streams, which is basically ads, right? You know, so
it's hard though, you know, you're chasing that, and you know, I still, you know, it's great having people look at your images and all that. I still to the point now that people are going to love what you do, people are going to hate what you do, as long as you're happy with what you're doing and posting what you love, who cares? You know, I understand that yes, we need that because we want people to phone us for you know, images and all that, but still you got to enjoy what you're doing and not post for somebody else, post for yourself too. And so that's a battle for sure.
Yeah. The likes and that at the end of the day, they're great for the social media presence and for, you know, building the following and stuff, but they don't actually provide any financial benefit that I've found, really. You know, it's
right. Unless you have a million followers, I guess.
So, and that's the one reason I do want lots of followers is when I do start doing photo tours and stuff, those are more and more potential clients. And companies do at least look at you a bit more when they want to give you some gear to try out if you have a bigger following.
Yeah,
and agreed. I mean, I have friends in the States that just get sent free stuff all the time by companies that I use their stuff, and these people get sent it for free and they're like, I'm not using this stuff. Like, it's just, and I'm like, man, am I paying hundreds of dollars for this gear? And I've searched, I've compared my engagement to theirs, and I've had a higher engagement compared to theirs, but they have the more followers. So it's, you know, hopefully it's more engagement based, but I think that bigger number really gets the company to look at you. You know, first.
Well, the brands, all the brands see is more eyes on the product, right?
Yep.
Whether, you know, because it may not even be the photographer themselves engaging with, you know, all the comments. Because at one point, like earlier on, I never responded. Like, I wasn't really interactive as far as like, I might just check like if they made a comment or something like that. Now I make it a point to respond to everybody. You know, because if they took the time to drop a comment, then I feel it's only right to leave a comment back, right? You know what I'm saying?
I could be better at that for sure, like way better at that. I'm just I don't understand how people with these big followings that get hundreds and thousands of comments actually keep up with that, because you know, if I get 20 comments, I'm like, oh my God, this is overwhelming. I have to respond to these, but you're right.
Thanks.
And that's the thing too. I don't want to just say the same thing every time. So it's hard. It's social media is hard. And I have a lot of learning to do for sure.
Well, I think a lot of these larger channels that have that kind of following have actual social media managers too.
Yeah, probably.
Like, assistants, I know a lot of local photographers here, some of the bigger names like Paul Ziska and Offbeat and stuff like that, they all have social media managers and stuff. Well, I've actually seen the ads for them too, you know, come up once in a while too.
Yeah, Paul's always hiring people.
Yeah, that's right. So it's just one of those things that when you get to a certain point, you just don't have the time to engage. I mean, you certainly should when you can, because, you know, the photographers, you know, the participants, the friends, they love that, right? Yep. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But at some point, I guess, you know, I would hope I get that big one day that I need a manager. Hey, what about you, Chris, Brandon? Hey, you know, at one point it'd be like, it would be cool, but,
And then they would be posting them too. They'd be posting and responding. You wouldn't have anything involved in that. Just another side of the business at that point, right?
That's right.
To be able to not only make a living doing it, but to have enough money to pay someone to do that would be, that would be a dream. Yeah.
Ideal. For sure. But it's the hump, right?
Oh yeah.
It's like working, you know, I mean, Chris and I can both attest to this. We have big ideas for the channel and workshop, like all this kind of stuff going forward. But when, you know, Chris works a 12, 14, 16 hour day doing his videos, his real estate stuff, and I finish the 12 hour and we get home and it's like, well, yeah, I don't really want to look at a camera or I don't want to edit. I want to just, you know, sit on the couch, read a book or, you know, and then it's like, okay, I'll get at it again tomorrow. Or I'll get to it on the weekend. And it's like after a 50-60 hour work week on the weekend, you're like, oh, this is nice in here having a coffee.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it's not even editing photos. It's like we all have like 18 different hats. You're a web designer today. You're a marketer today. Oh, you're business today. You're whatever. And I mean, last night I was literally editing video clips for stock footage from 2021. You know what I mean? Because I haven't had a chance to get to that stuff. So now I could do better on that. I'm just trying to keep up on all that content. Yeah,
I'm the same way. I am.
Yeah.
I'm still figuring out the photo taking part of it.
And sure.
I am terrible at the business side of things. Like just terrible at it. Like with print sales and stuff. You know, I talked to my wife about it the other day. She's like, so how do people buy prints off your website? Well, I'm like, there's all the info. You send me an email. And then we go from there. And she's like, well, it should be easier. They should be able to click the size, click how they want it, add to cart, and pay for it right then and there. And I agree. And then immediately I was like, oh my God, that's so much work I have to do now to add all of those products.
Yeah.
But now it's like, you know, maybe rather than having 200 photos for them to choose from on the website, just cut it down to like 20 or 30 of the best of the best, you know, the greatest hits, sure. And just leave it at that.
And you know what? And the other thing you can do is every quarter you can have a new release.
Yeah.
That's you know what I mean? Too, yeah. Or something like that where people are looking forward to, okay, well, what's Brandon's next new release? Okay. It's this gorgeous links and you know what I mean? Whatever. And then the next quarter it's something else. Cause like you said, people just, you know, I used to be that guy where everything that was good was on my website, like years ago, yeah. Photo Shelter. And actually when you landed on the homepage, it was just one of those like portfolio pages yeah. and you could scroll for days because yeah. of all the pictures on there. And that made absolute no sense. You know what I mean? But you wanted to show your stuff. But I think if you do like what you had just suggested, suggested, make it more of a niche or more of a gallery of, or what's that called? Like a small gallery, intimate. Yeah. Intimate kind of gallery with, like you said, your top 10, 20, 30 best images. I think that's probably a good way to go to start. Well,
yeah. It's almost like walking into a photo gallery. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you don't have 1,000 images for you to look at on the walls. That's I guess right. That's maybe a great idea.
That's a great analogy actually. Yeah. You bet. So
yeah, I've been in all the galleries in Banff and Canmore, and there's some that are definitely more appealing than others that are just some are really overwhelming and some are just like, this is amazing. It feels like you are walking into an art gallery that you can
actually
buy stuff from.
Yeah, exactly. No, yeah, I get that for sure. So kind of iffy with the video, more stills. Okay, got it. Check it off.
Yeah. I got a question for you. I've noticed there's a bunch of drone shots from here. So I'm a drone pilot, but I have a hell of a time actually getting out in nature using the drone because of the park situation and all that. It looks like Tumbler Ridge has a lot of crown land. Is that do you fly a lot on that?
Yeah, I mean, I can pretty much fly anywhere within, you know, not within 5 miles of the airport.
Yeah.
So yeah, I could take it up from my backyard right now and go rip around town.
Nice.
With it being in eyesight, of course, at all times.
Oh, of course. Yes. Yeah. VLOS.
So
visual line of sight.
Yeah. And then my last trip up to the Northern Rockies, I actually reached out to BC Parks and got a permit to fly within all the parks up there. However, I did learn, there's like a right of way along the highways and the parks don't own the air over the parks. So if you're taking off and landing on the roadway, you can, I think, do what you want, but
is that right? Oh,
I believe so. I haven't fully looked into that. I just like to play it safe and just get the permit. That way I'm covered. Yeah. It blows my mind seeing people take photos in provincial parks and tag the provincial park in it. And I know these people are not getting permits, but it doesn't seem to affect them negatively. I just, I don't want my
drone
career.
Drone photos, you mean?
Yeah. Drone photos, videos, they're hashtag in the provincial parks. And it's, you know, it's like, just cause your drone is under 250 grams doesn't mean you don't get to violate the no drone rule. So
no, I have heard a bunch of people getting fined big time though. So
yeah,
especially I know the Jasper, the fires there a couple years ago, there was some people got fined there big time. And so you just definitely got to be careful. And
yeah, last time I was in Jasper, we were at the dog park there and we started chatting with the other guy that was there. And he was one of the wardens for Parks Canada. And he's like, I'm the one that denies all the drone permits. He's like, we don't let tourism fly their drones. It's for like investigative purposes only. Basically, if they're trying to investigate a crime or
search and rescue, maybe.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. So, cause they're like, we don't want to present a, you know, a false reality to people. Like, well, I want to see that view of that waterfall. Well, you need a drone to do that. So they don't want to, they don't want to promote that. And he was telling us, you know, he's like, there's a video online of a guy at Athabasca Falls falling through the ice. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. And they went in to find his drone and they found someone else's drone instead.
Oh,
so there's just blatant disregard for rules. And, you know, it's just.
And the problem is, I think those people make the people that are doing right, like you and I, make us look bad when it shouldn't, right? They're giving us a bad rap and it's unfortunate for sure. So,
yeah, I just, what drone do you use?
I have the DJI Air 2S, I have my advanced license, so I fly that, but I have some issues here in Calgary. The whole north side of the city is pretty much there's a YYC airport all the way goes to the Springbank airport. So there's a big, huge air issue there. which is why I got the advanced license. Because if I only had the basic license for over 250, I couldn't fly in the northern part of the city at all.
Yeah.
The Mini, you can. I have looked at the Mini 4 Pro potentially because mine can't fly over people and construction sites and all that kind of stuff. Right. So I think it'd be handy just to lift off rather than applying to Nav Canada for a permit for the day kind of thing.
Totally. But yeah.
Do you have a Mini?
I have the Mavic 3 Pro.
Oh, okay.
Because I wanted to use it for wildlife, but I also have a non-functional Air 2S because I I crashed it really, really hard.
Really?
I was doing a, there was a waterfall near here and I was doing a nice big pull out shot. Just,
yeah.
I thought I had more altitude. I did not. And I just flew it straight backwards. And I don't know if you find that when you have the sensors all turned on, if it's really windy, sometimes the drone will almost stop because the propellers will get in the way of the sensors and it just keeps going off. And so I had turned them off and I learned my lesson.
Oh, no.
I flew right into the canopy of trees at like, you know, 55 kilometers an hour.
Oh,
and, full speed back. I almost cleared them. And I had to get someone in a boat to take me across the river to retrieve it because I don't want to litter. I needed to, I didn't want that just sitting out there. So
sure,
I got the drone back. It just, you know, sits on a shelf now, but
beyond repair, you can't repair that. That's kind of one of those.
I could, but I also, it was kind of more of a excuse to upgrade. So, and you know, I had trouble with the field of view is so wide. So to use it for wildlife, like, you know, I'd you know, be flying way over a moose and they're still like looking up and I'm like, I'm like 100 meters up. How are you?
So there's no zoom on it.
Now the Mavic 3 Pro, it's basically like, you know, a wide angle lens and a 70 to 200 basically that I can fly around the sky.
Nice.
And it's,
so
I'll be bringing that with me when I go to Terrace in early April, because in the spring you get mountain goats that come that they spend their winters low down on the cliffs. But as the snow melts and the greenery starts to grow, they'll be up on the cliffs between Terrace and Prince Rupert. So
nice.
I'll be able to photograph them safely without disturbing them at all from a good distance. So
good.
I'm looking forward to that. And
no kidding.
Yeah, no, I love doing drone stuff. I love just doing abstract like landscapes and stuff.
Tell us about the bison.
Oh yeah, Joe.
Tell us about the bison. I just kept talking to Chris. I'm like, that was very cool. Like the head's cleaning, like Chris was saying. Like he was like, that was wicked.
They're like shoveling the snow.
That was wicked. So tell us a little bit about that.
So that was up in the Northern Rockies along the Alaska Highway. That was not in a park. So I didn't need a permit for that, but I did have one in case I found some that were within the park. I just tried to, you know, I've go up there. Lynx are always my subject I'm looking for whenever I'm going out. But when you're up there, bison are a guarantee. It's hard to have a guaranteed wildlife sighting with a wild animal, but up there bison are pretty guaranteed. And I just wanted to do something different. I feel like I shoot the same shot of them with their snowy head coming out and they're covered in snow or they're, you know, just portraits and that. And I just wanted to do something a bit different. So I sent the drone up and they could not care less about the drone. They did not act like it was there. So I did some photos and then I just really wanted to illustrate what they were doing. And it just made sense from above watching them their huge heads. That was pretty cool. So I like doing stuff like that. It's nice having a flying camera that you can kind of get creative
with. Well, that's what it's about, the behavior, right? We were talking about that earlier. Like that's something that nobody in the million years would have seen without a drone. Like that's just one of those shots that,
or in a photo. I mean,
or exactly. 100%.
And the photo, it's one where a lot of people are like, what the hell am I even looking at? So it's one where the photo works and the video also works, because then the video, you're like, okay, well that's what I'm looking at. And it's an interesting behavior too.
Totally. They go together almost.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's super cool. So,
and the reason I went on that trip is because I didn't think I would win that, the Canadian Geo contest because I got an email saying I was a finalist and it was two wildlife photos. So I was like, okay, I'm a finalist in the wildlife. I'm like, but I really want to win the overall. So I booked a trip, I booked hotels and went up there. And then I found out I did win. So, but I still went up there and I'm trying to win it again. And I'm, you know, just trying to get creative with some of these wildlife stuff with, you know, the familiar species and, you know, just trying to get a bit different with it.
That's awesome. Great segue, by the way. There's the perfect
segue right there. Yeah, okay. I guess what we're talking about, what are we talking about next? Tell us a little bit more about your win and what would that was all about.
So that was surreal. It still feels, it still doesn't feel like it really happened.
Yeah.
Congratulations, so, by the way, it was well deserved.
Congratulations.
Thank you guys. Yeah. So, in the 2022 contest, I had a drone photo from above looking down at the Nass River, which is in the northwest, of BC. Kind of like sand ripples in sand, at low tide with a bit of green. It's a really abstract photo that another one like that bison shot where people are like, what is this? I don't know what I'm even looking at. And I love those pictures because those are the ones that make people stay on them a little longer without me having to write a six paragraph long caption. And that was another one too, that did terrible on social media. Like it didn't do well at all. So that really showed me that, you know, just because something doesn't do well on social media, that it doesn't mean it's a bad photo. So I was a runner up in the landscapes category for the 2022 contest. And I told my wife, I'm like, I really want to win the overall thing. So I spent 2023 doing four or five trips way up north, just really focusing. And, you know, I got to thank my wife for, you know, taking care of the bills and the financial part of our relationship and also our four cats and two dogs. Cause you know, she's got a busy job and, you know, I'm definitely putting a lot of responsibilities on her. So I got to thank her for that. And it allowed me go and focus and, you know, just really try my best at presenting a diverse portfolio. I didn't want it to just be you know, here's 18 pictures of grizzly bears or, you know, I just went into it and trying to do my best and create some new stuff, but different stuff too. So, it was a grizzly bear photo and a lynx photo that were the finalists. They based it on the overall submission. I think I submitted like 70 photos or something like that. So,
oh, wow.
You did?
Yeah. I tried hard. I submitted a bunch.
Wow.
So can you explain? Okay, guys. So for those of you that don't know, so this is the Canadian Geographic Canadian Wildlife Photographer of the Year Award, right?
So not the wildlife. It's just the Photographer of the Year.
It's the overall.
But it's kind of misleading. It's not like they're taking into account wedding photographers and So, you know, landscape, weather, I think there's a adventure people category and a wildlife category. So I only submitted landscapes and wildlife cause that's what I do. So, it was two of my wildlife ones that were selected as finalists and I was like, awesome. That's, you know, last year I had one selected as finalist.
Sure.
This year's two. So maybe I have a shot at, you know, placing again. But then I got an email saying I won the overall thing and my knees literally buckled. It was a crazy, crazy email to get.
Sweet.
That is awesome.
So I ran upstairs and I just shoved my phone in my wife's face. I was like, look what it says.
Nice.
Then it was just chaos after that. It was interviews with like every national and local news agency for like a couple weeks, radio shows.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was, I couldn't even go out and take photos cause every day had like something for like 2 weeks, which is awesome. Like it allowed me to really, like a lot of people asked about ethical wildlife photography. So it was really great to have a bit of a platform to kind of tell people what it is. Cause people don't know what that is at all. They see a picture and they're like, oh, cool picture. And then they don't really think about the backstory and, you know, even know that stuff goes on. So,
Brandon, do you have to be part of the CanGeo photo club to enter the contest? Like, is that where the photos go or is it something you separately enter?
Yeah, I don't know if like by creating an account you are becoming a part of the photo club, but it is something completely separate. Like you do it have to actively enter it. They don't just go and like browse the photo club for the best of the best stuff. So you have to.
I get you. Okay.
You have to enter. There's no limit on what you could submit. They encourage you to submit a lot. So you know the overall winner is based on the overall amount that they submit, like the the quality, the overall quality. So I think it's a minimum of 3 photos you have to submit to be considered for the overall. So yeah, I went above and beyond with my 70 something photos that I did.
That's awesome. I really what are you on track for this year?
Like none. The bison photo, that's my only like decent shot so far this year. And that was back in January. Like I haven't.
Oh, pressure's on.
Well, when the contest winning stuff, and then it was a couple weeks of media stuff, at least one thing a day, and I just didn't have much time to get out. I've been out, you know, a few times lately. It's not been productive at all. Next month, mid-April, early April, I'm going back to the Northwest to the Terrace area, and I'm gonna just see what I can find there. Go check out the spots that I came to know. You know, it's possible that some of them are now clear cut, or there's just, you know,
for sure.
You never know what it's going to be like, but at least I know that area better than here. And hopefully, I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Are you making your way down to Jasper this year?
I will definitely. I'm only about a 6-hour drive from there. So,
we're closer than you are.
Yeah. I mean, for me, where I'm at, like 6 hours is nothing. That's just a normal.
It's only about five and a half hours for, I mean, depending you drive like Chris, it's 6.
Oh, wow.
Joe, 4 hours and 15
minutes. Three and a half.
So, we'll certainly keep in touch if you head down to Jasper.
Yeah, it'd be great great to meet up with you guys there.
Oh, yeah for sure.
Maybe do a little in the field chat too, right? You know, so.
Yeah, and my sister and her husband just moved to Banff. So I will be there more often as well. So.
Oh, nice. For sure.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So,
very cool.
We talked about the social media thing. I don't know if we really need to delve much into that as far as your approach and that sort of thing. But maybe tell us what platforms are you on? Like you're on Instagram.
Yeah. Instagram for the younger crowd, Facebook for the older crowd, and TikTok for Joe. Whoever's on TikTok. I don't know what's going on with TikTok.
Do you share your wildlife stuff on TikTok?
I've shared a few of the video. Basically, if I create a reel, then it ends up on TikTok. And I've started to do a few YouTube shorts as well, just to see.
Yeah.
Because every once in a while, like I'll post something on TikTok and it'll get, you know, 200,000 views, and I'll post the same thing on Instagram and it gets like 400 views. So
yeah,
I have no idea what's going on social media wise. I'm just happy to be a part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I hear. Are you on Threads too?
Oh yeah, I'm on Threads as well, but that's, I always forget about Threads.
I do too. I still forget about that.
If you're listening to Threads, I'm sorry.
It's different, but kind of unique. It's actually kind of cool. It's almost like X, you know, but for photographers, right? And there's been a lot of really cool conversations. You know, people just posting questions.
Yeah,
It's not always necessarily about posting your image. Everyone that you post on Instagram, Facebook, then Threads, then it's more, more about conversations. And I've been involved in a few, but I've actually just followed along, and it's actually a pretty neat platform for that kind of interaction. Right.
Yeah. And I've found some newer people that like, that I've never discovered before. So it is a great platform for that. And I don't use it correctly. I just post what I posted to Instagram and Facebook just on Threads. And
that's all I've done too. I've never actually posted a question to gain, to interact.
Yeah.
Sure. And it's sad because usually I just want to post and then leave, you know, and then go do something else and not really converse. But I mean, again, that's kind of the way it's going too. And, you know, you do meet a lot of cool people and a lot of cool information and stuff out there. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And it seems to be one that, I know Vero was a thing, and Vero's had a couple attempts and it just falls hard, but Thread seems to be like still going. I'm still getting, you know, decent amount of engagement on stuff, lots of followers. Mm-hmm. You know, every time I post, there's new stuff. And since it's a new platform, I can go back and share really old stuff that, you know, no one's seen. And so that's kind of what I've been doing lately on Instagram as well, is just kind of going back and, you know, sharing stuff with the contest when I got, I don't know, maybe like 2,000 new followers. So it's people that haven't seen my stuff before. Like when I go follow someone, I don't scroll back to the beginning of their feed. Right.
So, and it's a really good point. I've talked to a couple of guys that have large followings, and this was years ago when I talked to them before this whole reels and stuff like that, but they certainly recycled images.
Yeah,
for sure. Like, I mean, and there's nothing wrong with it. Stuff you posted even a year or so ago. Like you said, people, not everybody sees it. And I'm just like you. I don't scroll back a year to see everybody's feed to see, you know, I'll scroll a little bit, just, you know, last 20, 30 photos or, you know, something like that. But I'm not going back into 2023. You know, sort of thing.
Just a sampling. So, you need to see if they're worthy of the follow, right? You got to see.
That's
if
right.
You know, but you don't need to, you know, see the very first photo they've ever posted.
No. Yeah, exactly. No. Exactly. So
I mean, no, I'm sure they don't want you to see the very first photo they posted.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, how many of you deleted since the beginning, right? Yeah. Lots. Anyways.
Yeah. I do have to say, I mean, even in Instagram, the Reels scenario with the Facebook Reels, we had, there's a video I posted on Instagram for as a reel. It's an elk bugling and Joe 1DX Mark II shutters in the background just going off like crazy. And I put some music to it. I think I got 2,000 views or something like that on Instagram. But on Facebook Reels, it got like 200,000 and I gained like 3,000 followers on Facebook, right? Like I went from 300 followers to 3,000. So I always keep telling people, don't forget about Facebook Reels because there's still Facebook something there. Facebook Reels,
yeah.
Yeah, Facebook is good for everything. I mean, it's
– yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, I just check that little slider when I'm posting to Instagram, like also share to Facebook.
That's right.
Exactly. And it is fun to see, you know, what gets likes where, and you know, does time of day matter? Like you never, you never
it's
know,
a
right?
science. It's an absolute it science.
And I am not a scientist. I do not know what's going on. I'm just,
there's some YouTube channels I follow about Instagram and algorithms. And you know, it's almost like every week, okay, this is something new you have to know about Instagram Reels or something new or algorithms changing in March and this and that. And you can't keep up.
No, I gave up. I just post whenever.
That's right.
It doesn't. Yeah.
I try to be. I try to be consistent. I try to do, you know, once a day if I can. Lately, without much new stuff to share, it's, you know, once every couple days.
Sure.
Because I mean, I've looked at accounts, you know, like, oh, I wonder what that person's doing. I haven't seen anything in a while, and their last post was from 3 years ago. It's, you know, I don't want to be that guy because, you know, sometimes I unfollow them because they're not, you know, I can only keep up with so many things. If you follow like 5,000 people, you're only going to see a fraction of it. So, you know, I try to follow the key ones that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
And it's, so I don't know. I just try to be consistent and just post what I do. And, you know, it seems to kind of be working so far. And I mean, my goal was just to have enough followers that there was a K after the number. That's all I wanted. Right. So I just finally hit that and now I'm happy. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Nice.
That's awesome. So you were talking about before that you'd like to do like a photo tour in Costa Rica at some point. Do you do photo tours now with like in your region there or no?
I haven't done any here. It's hard to do them. And, you know, I feel bad taking people's money because I've done a few private ones where, you know, someone will be, it was when I lived in Terrace and, you know, John Marriott would do tours out of Prince Rupert. And I had people that would go on his tours and they're like, hey, I'm going to be in Terrace for the day. Can I book you to go out for a day? And I'm like, sure. You know, we're probably not going to see anything. And, but you see a black bear, coyote, get a few photos and it's just nice to, you know, get out and meet some people that way.
Sure.
I've done some grizzly bear tours out of Prince Rupert and Kitimat when I was in Terrace, and that's
okay.
They're much more predictable. Like I can't tell you the amount of people that, you know, want me to take them to find lynx as if like they seem to think I've got a group of lynx that I just follow every day and know where they are at all times.
You're the lynx whisperer.
Well, yeah, and I get messages from people all over the world, like, "Hey, I'm coming to Canada. Where should I go for links?" And I'm like, I don't know if you know how big Canada is. First of all,
exactly.
Also, I don't know where they are. I just try to, you know, get out and spend as much time out there as possible trying to find them, because, you know, where I'm at right now inside this house, I'm not going to see any links. So you just got to get out there and you know, put the time in.
That's it.
And that's it. Some of these images we as photographers get have taken years to get. Like, and I don't mean a steady year in the woods, but I mean, it's putting in the time, you know, and we may never get that image again. And I'm not talking like, you know, that specific elk shot or whatever, but that type of behavior that, you know, you may never see, or, you know, it's just, I don't know if they realize the patience, you know, the tenacity, you know, keep going, you know, it's probably going to suck today as far as, you know, not sucking as far as the activity goes, but there's a really good chance you're not going to see anything, you know, but you just got to keep going and keep it up. And, you know, and then when that moment happens, it's like made the last year a major year, you know, so.
It does, you know, sometimes it is just that one mm-hmm. moment that changes everything, you know, that mm-hmm. makes it. Because all those times you're out, say you're looking for, like in my case, links, I still find other stuff that I'm, you know, out, and you learn from those things. You just become so familiar with your camera. So when you do actually have that opportunity with that once in a lifetime shot, you're ready for mm-hmm. it. You don't screw it up. Cause I mean, I'm sure we've all screwed up our fair share of images as we've, you know, been learning how to do this stuff.
Yeah.
And for sure. That's one thing I tell people when they ask me, like, you know, how do I find this stuff? I'm like, first mm-hmm. off, stop asking people where things are. That's not, mm-hmm. that just doesn't work like that. I could give you the kilometer marker on the highway where I saw the last links. There's not going to be a links there today.
Yeah.
That's just not how it works.
No. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just do some research and use your gear. Like forums online are great for learning a bit about gear, but I feel like so many people just live in the forums, and it's like, just go use your stuff. All these cameras do the same thing. Just find the one that literally just get one that works for you, learn it, and be an expert with your gear and know your limitations, your ISO limitations. Like, you know, if your camera, like you're saying, you're shooting at 25,000 ISO. I know with my 1DX2, you know, 10,000, 12,000, if it's a moment that I need to capture, I will shoot at that. And you know, but if I'm looking at, if I got auto ISO on and now it's at 100,000 ISO, I know that I'm doing something wrong, and, you know, I'm not going to be, you just got to know the limits. So
you're scrolling that shutter all the way down. It's just like, why 1/2000 of a second, 100,000 ISO. Yeah, something's wrong here.
That's when you switch to video, because you only have to be at 1/50th of a second for 24 frames. Oh, right?
So video early in the day and later in the day is definitely easier.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
exactly. No, that's cool.
Yeah.
So as far as learning goes, you know, we asked this question too. Things are ever evolving. I think once you think you know everything, you become pretty stagnant, you know, as a photographer. I've been doing this for a heck of a lot of years. I think all of us have. And, you know, every day, like, I'm a big YouTube guy. I don't have cable. I don't have, you know what I mean? I got the channels I follow and watch, and the stuff I'm still learning, I'm like, wow, that's super cool. Like, really? Like, you know, and it doesn't matter how long you've been doing it, or, I mean, I think you got to really keep an open mind, even composition, you know, or the way they, you know, they set up the camera for this, or a new camera setting that I never thought of. Like, I remember the breakthrough I had when I went on to manual with auto ISO. That wasn't too long ago. That was maybe 5, 6 years ago, 7 years ago or something like that. That was mind-boggling to me. And, you know, I was just like, wow, this is, that's the way I shoot now. It's with auto ISO, but I mean, that was a, for lack of a better word, that was a game changer for me. But yeah, every day you're just seeing stuff, new stuff. So what do you do as far as education goes and that sort of thing? Like
keeping up on the times kind of thing.
Yeah. Like, is it just, are you on forums? Are you watching YouTube? Are you watching the Nature Photo Guys podcast on YouTube? Or I had to throw that in there. So what do you do for education?
So, I mean, I don't do much. I should be doing mm-hmm. more. A lot of my learning comes from failing in the field and trying to not redo that. Yeah,
that's a good one.
Especially with digital stuff, right? You can mm-hmm. you can see your mistake right then and there. And
totally.
So lots of that. And then, yeah, discovering new ways to shoot. I like the manual mode of the auto ISO I use mm-hmm. a lot. Mm-hmm. I typically will shoot in shutter priority. That's kind of my mm-hmm. go-to because I love just being able to quickly scroll my wheel with my thumb and adjust my, you know, exposure plus or minus one or three stops without, because when you're in the manual mode with auto ISO, all you're doing is changing the aperture. I think it's what it's set to on the camera, on my camera. And I like just being able to quickly basically adjust the ISO on my own, which is what the shutter priority allows me to do. So most of the time shutter, yeah. I don't mm-hmm. know if I'm explaining this right, but yeah, most of the time I'm in shutter priority because I can mm-hmm. just quickly on the fly, basically by, you know, the exposure compensation that's mm-hmm. allows me to kind of adjust it. It basically adjusts the ISO for me while keeping it in auto ISO.
Because, so keep your shutter the exact
so yeah
shutter that you want basically. So
because I know like I need a minimum shutter speed to do something. If I'm in, you know, say aperture priority, it's gonna make my shutter speed real, real slow. Like oftentimes sure. way too slow. And if I'm starting to get real creative, then it's full manual and, you know, just messing around with that kind of stuff. But yeah, mostly shutter priority for what I'm doing because mm-hmm. I'm trying to usually just stop the action and I know the mm-hmm. the limits I, you know, the lower I need for that and, mm-hmm. you know, catching rain falling or snow falling. That's fun to play yeah. around with shutter speeds and that.
Yeah, you betcha.
But one of the things within the last, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 years I started doing was back button autofocus.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Do you guys use that?
Oh, wait, all I have the time. Yeah.
Dual back button autofocus on yep. on mine okay. because which you wouldn't because one button spot focus and the other button is animal eye detect.
Okay.
So yeah. yeah.
That's you can. Pretty
sure,
handy.
Chris. Rub it in, Chris. Yeah. Rub it in. Yeah. Well,
no, so on mine, the way I've got it set up, I've got one. It's the spot, and then the other yeah. one is the bigger
servo.
So yeah. say the animal flies away. It. Mm-hmm. I still keep it on servo mode all the time, mm-hmm. but it at least,
I get you.
You got a bigger field of view to play with, I guess.
A bigger selection of autofocus points for the yeah. camera to use. But sure, then like, if I've got my 1.4 converter on, I only have those middle ones to choose from. So,
right.
you know, back button with that is great because you basically can use it as a spot autofocus with still keeping it in servo. So, you know, I can use one of those top autofocus points, you know, push the button, focus on the animal's face, and then let go, move the camera to the side a bit to compose, and then actually take the photo.
Mm-hmm. It's funny you say that. I actually forgot we used to do that.
Yeah.
I know that sounds funny, but once you have the animal eye detect, I mean, you don't even think about the other side of it anymore. You know what I yeah. mean? The spot focus is still there, but the animal eye detect is just right there. So when you get, you know, a mirrorless camera, you'll know that you'll start to not use the other way as well. But
yeah.
but the spot focus still comes in handy yeah. when there's an elk in the trees, when it's not yep. catching on an eye, you know,
even
that
manual
kind of thing.
Focus.
Oh yeah.
Even manual yeah. focus still comes into play yeah. when you're shooting through vegetation and rain or heavy snow and stuff. I mean, yeah. that's not something to forget about just because you have the latest and greatest. Like
no.
autofocus is still autofocus. It's still trying to yeah. focus on what's closest to you. So,
or even in video, I switch to manual mm-hmm. focus all the time in video. Like yeah. I'm always on manual focus as long as the animal is moving across the plane
yeah.
horizontally, I'm okay. Vertically or, you know,
yeah.
front to back.
Yeah. yeah. Front to back. Then there's an issue. Right. But mm-hmm. if it's going horizontally, I'm in manual all day and landscape video. I just switch to manual immediately. So there's yep. definitely, It's definitely the
way. Yeah, I use manual all the time. If I'm shooting, like, Lynx a lot of times will walk into the real thick stuff and just sit and turn back at you. And like, you're shooting through a wall of thin little branches, and you need to. Yeah, but then you're trusting your eye. Like, am I actually focused on it? So you take a few photos, look, hope the animal's still there when really you put your head back up. One thing I'm excited about the mirrorless cameras is the articulating back screen. Like, to be able to, like, I do dippers are fun to photograph here. And a lot of times that involves just laying on your stomach on the on the shore of a river.
Sure.
And it's so hard to like, it's just so uncomfortable. I know they do make like 90 degree eyepieces, so you're actually looking down.
I actually had one of those, and they weren't all that expensive at the time. I picked it up at the camera store, and it was a game changer too at that time, just for that reason. That was before the articulating screens, right? So I would certainly grab one, you know, if you could find one.
I'm definitely looking forward to the screens with these new cameras. And I was in Africa just before the pandemic started, and I loved it there, but you're so high up in these safari vehicles that you don't get that eye level that I really like. It kind of seems more eye level when the animal's further away, for sure. But I mean, being able to just hold your camera way down out of the side of the vehicle and use that screen and the animal eye detect, like, it could lead to some really, really cool images for sure.
Even saying that, like, just even like, so this past year during the elk rut, I was standing in the river and I had holding the foot on my lens down and that screen up. And so I had that eye level elk crossing the river, you know what I mean? Yep. Try and do that laying down on your stomach, like, you know, know, I feel your pain because, I was just like you, I was, pushing mirrorless aside, I didn't want to go. Cause I was so comfortable with that 1D. Right. But when I first started using the articulating screen, I'm like, how the hell did I live without this? Because you're even moving it to the side, you know what I mean? Like, for video or whatever, right? You know, tilting down, like, just even
or holding up in the air. Right?
Yeah, different point of view, different point of view, and tilting it down and stuff like that. So it's going to change the way you think and the way you shoot. Like, you'll absolutely love it when you get there. And being electronic viewfinder too, EVF, you're not going to be worried so much about exposure composition anymore.
Right.
Because it's what you see, right? You know, like that's the exposure, which I found really helps. And it's so easy to set up exposure comp with the back wheel, just, okay, stop and a half open, two stops. Like, it's instant as opposed to like on the DSLR.
Yeah.
You hope you got that one and a half is the correct setting or two stops or, you know, without having to look again. Right. So, it'll certainly change the way you do photography.
It did feel like cheating though when we first got them in certain aspects, for sure. So yeah, if you the amazing photos you're getting now, wait till you get that. I mean, I tell you. So
yeah, I watched John Marriott did a presentation recently with Canon, like online thing. And he was basically like, if you're even considering going mirrorless, just do it. Like, the advantage it puts you ahead of the DSLR world is worth it. And I mean, I've kind of been looking at it two different ways. One, financially, it's expensive to upgrade to these things. Mm-hmm. But two,
sure,
it's like, you never want to buy the first year model of a new vehicle while they work out the kinks and get that figured out. But I mean, it seems like mirrorless is... obviously, it's the way of the future. They've got everything figured out right now. And I'm excited to finally upgrade some real gear. It's going to be an exciting day.
It's just your camera body. I don't own an RF lens. I actually have an RF. It's a 24-120 or something. It came with the R6 Mark II. Like, it was a kit lens.
Okay.
But I don't use it. So I don't have an RF lens at all. It's all the EF to RF adapter. Same with Chris.
Yeah.
So
I have one now, but...
Yeah, you have one now, that one sitting behind your left shoulder there.
Yeah, right over here.
That 400.
That's 2 weeks old, that one.
Oh, nice.
And he doesn't own a truck anymore. He had to sell it to buy the lens. But
I just walk everywhere now.
So. That's right. But that's the beauty part. That was a big thing for me, was that I could use all my EF glass.
Oh, I mean, so, yeah, it's handy.
Oh, and the one thing too, Brandon, is that they have an EF to RF adapter that's got a built-in variable ND. So I put that between the camera body and my 1-400 for all my video, right, with the 5D. And you know what it's like shooting video? You had a specific shutter speed, right? Your ISO. I don't even know if I'm saying this right, but Chris will
correct me. I was going to say, well, you're doing good, Joe. I'm listening.
And then instead of what I was doing before, cranking it to F22 because there was so much light, you know, to try and get the exposure, right? But still wanting that feel of a prime, you know what I mean? The shallow depth of field and stuff like that. Man, it's just like little dial at the top. Oh, there's my exposure. Don't even think about it and go. So that's one other advantage why I didn't really want to jump on to getting the 1-500 because then you're using a like a matte box or do they make a filter big enough, Chris, like a variable ND fit on the front, like that spins?
Well, the matte box I use, the case matte box fits the 100 to 500 for sure. Okay. I have it on the 100 to 400 all the time, but I was just going to, I was going to tell Brandon as well. That was my concern with this guy. Cause it is the RF 400-28 and you know, it's 400-28 and I want to stay at 2.8, you know, even for video, I want to be at 2.8. That's why I bought it. Yeah. Right. So that was my concern because do I get the RF or do I get the EF? I mean, it's $100 difference in those lenses, but do I get the EF and be able to use the variable ND adapter? Well, I found out that Case actually has a built-in drop-in filter with a variable ND. So it's actually supposed to be here tomorrow. So I'm kind of looking forward to it, but yeah. So therefore you can still use a variable ND with the drop-in system without that adapter. So there are options there for sure. Right. So variable ND is imperative or ND at all is imperative for video for sure.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I just bought some Case filters, within the last year, the magnetic.
Oh, the set. Revolution system or whatever? No,
Wolverine. Yeah.
Wolverine, I think they're called. Yeah. They're great. I mean, I haven't used them all that much, yet, but I love the system. The fact that they just kind of snap on and off real quick and
it's amazing.
Just twisting the polarizer. It's really, it's so simple.
And the glass is
and
amazing.
And stacking too. Stacking the NDs.
And it seems like real good quality stuff. Like my old 10 stop ND filter that I used to use for, you know, long exposure waterfalls and stuff, just screwing it on and off. And sometimes it gets stuck on there and it's just, So these Case ones are great.
It is. Yeah. And when I first got the Case, I was a big Lee filter shooter, right? Yep. And so I did a side-by-side with the NDs because the Case K9 system is just like Lee. It's a drop-in, right? Like you slide them up and down the holder and everything. And I did that side-by-side at Elbow Falls just to see. And with the Lee system, it has that kind of the cyan, like it's got a color cast. I mean, a 1 second fix in Lightroom, right? Yeah, eyedropper, boom, whatever, it's fine. But Case was neutral.
Yeah.
Like no color cast. Mm-hmm. So as soon as I seen that, sold all the Lee stuff and ended up going with the Case and haven't looked back since. Right. So you'll be super happy. Like no quality issues at all. Like they're super sharp, very well made.
And even the matte box is brilliant the way they've come up with it. They're all magnetized, the filters, polarizer,
awesome.
Variable neutral. Yeah. It's a really good system as well. So I mean, I should have a video coming out on that actually in the next month or so.
Awesome.
So,
nice.
So it's good system. Yeah. All the Case stuff. I can't say anything bad about it. All the Case stuff that they have out there is wicked, eh, Joe? Yeah.
It is. And this is being where you're in the position you are now with, DSLR going mirrorless. That's why I wanted to bring that stuff up for you because, and me being somewhat new to video, like 2 or 3 years, trying it, and with the NDs and screwing on and all that kind of stuff, I just found that adapter, man, it's going to be really hard for me to pick up that 1-500 RF.
Oh, yeah.
At some point, because I have the 1-4 already in that adapter. Like if I was going straight with nothing, of course I'd get the 1-500 all day long. It's just that setup now. Like, I mean, it's, other than the extra reach. Yeah. And I'm so used to it too. Right. Like,
well, and you could use an extender with the 100-400 too. Right. And
you can. And yep.
So that's another lens I'm considering. That's one of the lenses I first originally had with when I first started doing wildlife photography was the 100-400.
Oh, the old push-pull-push, push-pull one?
Yeah.
I had that one too, yeah.
It was a good lens. It was great.
Oh, for sure.
To be able to have that, you know, the options.
Reach. Yep.
But, yeah, I don't know. The drop-in filters, you guys actually, have you ever used those with your 500? Like your big prime?
No, I've never used it.
Neither.
I've never felt I needed a polarizing filter for wildlife. Not that I shouldn't have used it. Well, Chris will tell you why. Like, I mean, you got a polarizing filter for your 400, right?
No, I didn't get the polarizing filter. All I'm getting is the variable ND right now. Oh. I was considering getting a drop-in polarizer for it, for loons, you know, on lake, yep. that kind of stuff.
That's what we're thinking about.
Yeah.
We weren't sure about you, Brandon.
For the variable ND, I wouldn't use it for photos. I'll take it out, put the other one in. But for video is what I was thinking for sure, so.
Yeah, video, you learn really quickly about dust on the sensor when you're trying to keep that shutter speed down and your f-stop is 22. And can you even edit dust spots out of video? Because
you can mask them out, but you got to do every frame. I mean, it's so difficult.
Yeah, with photos, I've learned that too. And I'm so bad at keeping that sensor clean. Hopefully that
I'm sure there's an AI tool now that maybe can. I don't know, but
yeah, that'd be nice.
If not, it's coming, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure. So projects, anything coming up? I mean, this year, it's just maybe getting out there, trying to find more wildlife, trying to get those images for photo contests. Like, do you have any thoughts? Like, you know, have you had any ideas on maybe creating a book or an ebook or any other kind of projects? Or is there anything like that coming up?
Yeah, so I when I lived in Terrace in the Northwest, I did 3 coffee table photo books. Sold pretty well. I've sold a few thousand of those, so they're in offices and coffee tables, kind of all over the place. Wow. So
very cool.
Know that. That's
are they all
great.
Sold out now? Nobody can get them anymore, kind of.
I have a few of the most recent one, which is from 2015, so it's still not that recent. I got a couple hundred of those left, and nice. They can be found on my website. Same with a few calendars I have left as well. I love doing the books because people. They last. They're something people have forever. Mm-hmm. It's not a photo that's on Instagram that someone sitting on the toilet scrolls by. It's just different. So I love the books that I did. I just wish they had a bigger reach. I wish I made the mistake of titling them Skeena 1, 2, and 3. So the Skeena is the river that runs through Terrace. If you're not from the area, you don't know what the hell the Skeena is. And
isn't that a big steelhead river?
It is. Yeah. It's a big salmon and steelhead river. It's, you know, world renowned for fishing. So if you're a fisherman, you might know the Skeena.
Yeah, I do. I do. And Jim Teeny, I used to watch all his old VHS videos fishing the Skeena for steelhead. But sorry, go ahead.
So that's, I named my books too local and that was my mistake. They did sell, they sold well locally, but you know, my goal is to have them in, you know, stores in Vancouver and, you know, maybe Northern Alberta. So the last couple of years, one of the things I was excited about moving to the Northeast was now I get to capture this part of the province. So I'm working on, you know, a new book, hopefully for maybe early next year. I'd like to have it ready to go. I have enough photos from the Northwest for, you know, that portion of it, but I still want some more ones in the Northeast. And for me, I found it takes a couple of years to do just, you know, one book. So,
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
You want to capture different seasons, different animals, different scenes, you know, the same place, you know, what it looks like a few different times of the year. And you want to be able to have enough photos that you can, you know, cull the worst of the worst. And so it's just kind of, you know, the better. So that's my big project I'm working on right now. And I'd like to do a bigger book and just higher quality. Nothing wrong with the quality of the ones I did last time. They were just, you know, they're like an 8x10 hardcover. I'd like to do something a bit bigger. And the last ones I had printed in China, which a lot of people have seen that as a huge negative. And for me doing it, it was affordable. And not affordable. It still costs, you know, like $5,000 to get, you know, 1,000 books printed. It's still not cheap.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But it was a, you know, about a third of the cost of doing it in North America somewhere. But I would love to have it be able to say printed in Canada on the next one.
Yeah, so, you betcha.
Nice.
That's the goal. It's going to be a lot more expensive to do it, but you know, I like the style of them that I did. It's just, it's basic. It's a picture and a small caption. Even I might not even do captions. I don't know. I just want it to be, you know, really artsy, something that just people want, you know, to keep in their house that will last for a while. So that's the current project I'm working on. I would also like to do some photo tours, organize some of them. Nice. One of the people, there was zip lining that was at the place we stayed in Costa Rica. And one of the people that was in our group was the minister of tourism for the whole country. And he was there during, he'd had the job for about 3 years during the COVID times. And he's since left and started his own travel company. So I've already been in talks with him. He's already told me where I need to go, and he can basically help me put these packages together. And then it's just my responsibility to find, you know, four or five people to come with me. So
excellent.
Sometimes timing is everything, isn't it?
Wow. No, it's not always what you know, it's who you know, and just making those connections.
Absolutely. Oh, you bet.
But the book is the thing I'm really, you know, kind of a personal project I'm trying to do. So that's
awesome.
Yeah. So everything I do now is potentially for that.
Very cool. And people can buy your prints on your website.
Yeah. Prints, books, calendars, everything can be found at my website, brandonbroderick.com or .ca. I still have the .ca.
We'll definitely be linking of your socials. Everything will be in the description below. So
you betcha.
Everybody's got access any and all of it there. So, so what would, this is a question we ask everybody, for somebody starting out, what kind of advice, what's one good piece of advice that, or a couple of pieces of advice you would offer to that person?
If it's someone starting out in, you know, wildlife and nature photography, just, you know, photography aside, just know the subject, know the species you're after, do a bit of research. You know, also learn the gear that you're with, you know, practice if you have pets, you know, practice, you know, shooting things that move quickly and, you know, knowing the limits of your gear, but yeah, know the species that you're after and, you know, start researching that. If you search on Google and, you know, put .pdf after your search, you can find like thousands of scientific papers written about everything. Like there's endless info. We live in a world now where every bit of information that, you know, humans have figured out is accessible by usually the thing you're on, your phone. So, know your subject, know the time of year it's going to be there. Just try and figure it out. If you're, you know, if you're looking for lynx, don't go look where lynx don't live. You know, if you're looking for African lions, don't be in British Columbia looking for them. Just
exactly. Yeah. That's a great tip. The .pdf. I had no idea.
Yeah. You can
I
find
did
lots
not
of
know
stuff.
That existed because of course, Google search for a lot of stuff there, but I had no idea that .pdf. So right in the search bar.
Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome. That's a great tip. Thanks
it's
for
great.
Sharing that.
It's not exciting reading. It's really scientific stuff, but it's handy because you know, know the gear. Like we were talking about, you know, ISO limits and stuff. Like for that type of stuff, set up a drink, a pop can, something in your house, and just set your camera on a tripod, take the same photo over and over again at different ISOs and see where your photo becomes unusable. And that's one way to really learn kind of the limits of that. And that way, you know, in the field, if you've got it on ISO and you see it's way beyond that, you know, you could at least gives you the chance to adjust in the field and not miss that shot.
Well,
great tip. Yeah,
that is, and a little bit has to do with your editing skills too, and whether you can combat that. So your cameras starts to fall apart. You know, the ISO starts to fall apart. Say 1600, but you know with your editing skills, you're good up to 3200 or 4000 or something because of the noise reduction and everything else. So knowing your limits with your editing too, along with that, you know, testing the ISO too. I mean, you can even cap your ISO.
Yeah, and that's I have mine capped at, you know, 12,000, I think. And I know I can shoot, usable photos at 6,000, and mm-hmm. especially with I do have Topaz. I don't use it. I think I see a lot of examples of it online, these guys mm-hmm. that, you know, mm-hmm. sell it. Mm-hmm. And to me, they either overdo it or to me, I feel like the before looks better than the after. So
you got to be careful.
I use Lightroom at like 25-30%, and it seems to really do a great job with the higher ISO stuff.
Oh, the luminance noise and the sharpening and stuff You mean just manually? Nice. Yeah. I mean, I've been using that since Lightroom started, really. So yeah, I'm on the same page with you there. With the Topaz, I use Topaz, and you have to really drag those sliders down to the left.
Yeah.
You
gotta be careful for sure.
It's one of those, just a hint of it to help, and then out it goes, because it could go horribly wrong, you know?
I haven't spent the time learning it yet. I basically, mm-hmm. I bought it because they had some Boxing Day sale or something. Yep. It was a good price on the whole bundle. So I bought it.
Yep.
But then it was kind of the same time that Lightroom and Photoshop introduced their AI denoise type stuff too. Sure. So
yeah,
there's lots of different options out there. I personally use Lightroom to do all my selections, and then things go into Photoshop to actually be edited. Mm-hmm. That's just the way I've done things. And it's mm-hmm. hard to switch that up once you're kind of in the zone.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's got a different way of doing things. That's for sure.
Totally. And with Photoshop, there's like 8 different ways to do the same thing, it seems. So there's just whatever one you're familiar with.
Yeah.
And that's another thing, you know, just learn how to edit. And I see a lot of people boast online, like, no, not edited at all. Like, it's like, but it should have been. You should every photo, if you're shooting raw. They're so flat. And if mm-hmm. you just adjust the whites and the blacks a bit of contrast, it makes a huge difference. And it still looks like the photo did in the field. You're not, you know, taking trees out of corners and putting trees in other corners. It's just literally making it look like it did when you actually took the photo.
You're bringing it back to the vision you saw and standing there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's
right. There's no such thing as being a purist when it comes to photography anymore. Or even back in the day, I mean, Ansel Adams was a huge manipulator in the dark room too. So, I mean, that was just an old version of Photoshop. Yeah, you know what I mean? So, it's one of those things that it is necessary. For
and it's,
sure.
it's a personal preference too, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, I follow mm-hmm. a lot of people that they really heavily manipulate the photos to make them look very simplified, and it's more, you know, wall art friendly, and they probably sell a lot more prints than I do doing that. And, you know, for me, I like to just keep it as it was in the field.
Keep it real.
And it's just, yeah. So it's mm-hmm. just personal preference. There's no right mm-hmm. or wrong way to do stuff. It's just the way it is.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just
cool.
It's
and
just
that's fun. Why you're the Can Geo photographer of the year. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
So any last words, Brandon? I think we're gonna slowly wrap things up here. Anything last words, any thoughts you want to share? You know, again, huge congratulations on that Can Geo.
Yeah,
that was awesome. I know I was excited when I seen that, and I seen your name come up. Oh, cool. I know him, you know, that kind of thing. So that was great. So, cause I know we've chatted a little bit about the R5 and that kind of stuff too. Right. So,
yeah, I'm sure I'll have more questions for you about that too.
Anytime.
Have but either for sure.
Thank you guys for having me on. This is great. It's always, wildlife photography is one of those things it's hard to talk about just in a general social setting, because I can see people lose interest real quickly. And it's nice to actually be able to talk about it and not
talk
be judged.
Shop,
exactly.
Well, even saying you're a photographer nowadays, even in a social setting, people are just, oh, okay, well, I'm a photographer too, because I, you know, I have one of these, like, you know, so unless you can actually explain yourself, you know, it's not like everybody's a photographer. It's like, I actually, you know, I go out and, you know, take natural history photos. I do this, I do that, you know, it's just to your point. It's photography, people just don't. I think that the word's thrown around too loosely.
Well, I mean, anyone who owns a camera nowadays considers themselves a photographer. Yeah. And I mean, my 85-year-old grandparents had a camera. They were not walking around calling themselves photographers. So things have changed for sure. So I don't know. Everyone's free to do whatever they want. And it's we all start somewhere. I was calling myself a photographer when I was taking absolute garbage photos and they had the hugest watermark right across the middle. Who would ever steal this photo? No one would ever steal it. We all start somewhere and it's one of those things that there's always new stuff to learn, and it's fun to just get out, learn new stuff, learn from your mistakes. Don't get down on the mistakes, use them as ways to learn and improve. And
well, that was a really great comment you said when I asked you about learning. Just keep doing and learn from your mistakes. So that was some really good advice.
And get outside, just get out there.
That's right. Don't be the armchair photographer. I'm gonna do that. You got to get on the road and put in the hours. I'm jealous of that too. I see some stuff people are posting up. I'm like, wow, that was awesome. Like, wow, that's, wow. It's like, yeah, I haven't been out in 2 months. How can I be jealous of the fact that, you know, they're putting in the time and I'm not getting like similar photos when I've just spent the last 2 months indoors? You know what I mean? So it's
5 days in a row, 16 hours a day editing, you know?
You got to put the time in.
You got to get out.
Yeah, 100%. Again, Brandon, we really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, thanks, Brandon.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, no problem. Like we said, we're going to have all of Brandon's information, all his socials, website, everything in the description below. So please give him a follow. Check out his website. And we'll catch you guys next time on the Nature Photo Guys podcast.
Thanks for watching.
Thanks again, guys.
Thanks for joining us on the Nature Photo Guys podcast. If you have any questions, contact us at info@thenaturephotoguys.ca. Or message us on Facebook and Instagram at the Nature Photo Guys Podcast. Visit YouTube and subscribe to our channel to watch all our latest videos. Or follow and listen to our latest podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or on our website at thenaturephotoguys.ca. We'll catch you next time on the Nature Photo Guys Podcast.